Shadow Talk.
It's another bumper edition of Shadow Talk. Today, the long telegram to Moscow. We cover Russia's attempts to ban the social messaging app and also read between the lines of a joint US and UK advisory on network infrastructure compromises by Kremlin-backed actors. In cybercrime news, the Magnitude exploit kit moves crabwise and switches its ransomware payload. Keeping things nautical, cyber pirates get their hands on a fish full of dollars by targeting the maritime industry. And speaking of patches, we'll bring you the news of vulnerabilities in the Drupal platform and Cisco's WebEx software. All this and much more in this week's Shadow Talk. Hello and welcome to Shadow Talk. I'm your host, Michael Marriott. And joining me this week is Harriet Groon. Hello, Harriet. It's been way too long.
I know, it's been ages, Mike. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. Obviously joining you is the reliable Raphael Amado. Hello, Rafa.
Hey, Mike. How are you? How was RSO?
It was good. Yeah, long week.
I can hear it in your voice. A nice husky tone this week. Yeah. Sure, our listeners will appreciate it.
Lots of talking on the booth, but that was all good. Okay, let's kick things off with perhaps one of the biggest stories of the week, and that was the news about a joint advisory that came out from the DHS, the FBI, and the UK's NCSC. And that was regarding the compromise of network infrastructure devices by Russian located threat actors. And now this has garnered a fair amount of mainstream media attention, as you might imagine, particularly in the current political climate. Perhaps, Harriet, you can give us a rundown of what the advisory actually stated.
Yeah, of course. All right, so this came out early this week. It was a nice long technical advisory that was published by coordinated effort from the NCSC and the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI in the US. So this was talking about devices such as switches and routers that have been targeted since about 2015. So threat actors were specifically looking for devices with generic routing encapsulation, Cisco Smart Install, or Simple Network Management Protocol enabled to then exploit those. So basically, they conducted port scanning, looking for specific ports which they could then exploit. So they were looking for really devices that had poor security around them or legacy protocols, which then they could access using credentials that were kind of either default on the machines themselves, on the devices, potentially the brute force as well, or gain through kind of, you know, the standard breach combo list type of data. So this getting access to these types of devices then allows the threat actors to kind of conduct a man-in-the-middle type of attack. So it allows them to monitor and modify or deny network traffic, misuse trust between devices as well. So I guess the outcome of this is that what they could have accessed from approaching these types of devices could have been something like intellectual property, potentially also just gaining a foothold on devices, which then could be used for future attacks, for example, maybe disruption, or at least sort of doing some reconnaissance around networks as well. So profiling those a little bit and understanding how those work.
Yeah, since 2015, that seems like a long while and all sounds very serious. And I'm not surprised that this has got a lot of media coverage about their current capabilities and about warnings of the ambitions to target Western organizations. What's your take on this? How worried should our listeners be?
So, as you mentioned, the reporting outlined that the activity was from 2015. And over the last 3 years, we've seen several instances where sort of the US, the UK, the Australian government as well actually have pushed out advisories around network infrastructure devices being targeted by threat actors. And this is the first time that they clearly kind of attributed it to a particular nation state. But obviously this has been going on for some time. And at the moment, we don't really have very good insight into whether the activity levels are spiking at the moment or anything like that. So in terms of the active threat of this campaign, it's not particularly clear. So it's not like we're suddenly seeing kind of, you know, any kind of extremely an all-out kind of cyber attack on the US and the UK. It's something that's been ongoing for a while. We don't have a lot of insight into kind of the spikes and troughs in activity. So yeah, I guess that's what we're looking at currently. There was some reporting by Cisco Talos a couple of weeks ago that they've seen some increase in scans for the port surrounding the Cisco smart install protocol. But we don't really know at the moment if that was done by actors in this campaign or potentially by other ones as well.
I think the timing here is something probably worth drawing out as well. So at least from our impression, from the people I've been speaking to as well, it's likely in part to sort of demonstrate some sort of solidarity in cyber defense between the US and the UK. And as you mentioned, Mike, this is driven partly by the current political climate, the political discord with Russia. So this all comes off the back of the recent controversy in the UK with the poisoning of Sergei Skripal and his daughter. We've seen the controversy over actions in Syria. So this political context needs to be kept in mind when we're looking at the timing of these advisories as well, I would say. When you look at it in combination, it appears as if more and more pressure is being applied by Western nations to call out what they claim to be Russian aggression. Now, this is a bit of a side point, but another thing I've noticed with this gaining so much mainstream media coverage outside of the infosec industry, what we're seeing is this conflation of what we mean by Russian cyber operations. And for me, Russian cyber operations is a very broad church. On one end of the spectrum, you've got network intrusions, sabotage operations. Then on the other side, you've got troll farms and disinformation activity through Twitter bots, which we've talked about before. And I've read countless articles recently about Russian cyber attacks, the threat of Russian cyber war, all very alarming reports. But then when you actually look into these articles, what they actually focus on is Twitter bot activity. So I think what we need to do is be a bit more discerning about what these headlines are actually saying. And I think Harriet has pointed out there exactly what the nuances are here.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point as well. So like the targeting of sort of weak devices on network perimeters or in network infrastructures are targeted by loads of groups. And, you know, it's not a highly sophisticated attack or anything like that. So for example, the misuse of that Cisco smart install was really recently seen, I think it was the week before last, in some disruptive activity that was targeted actually at Iran and Russia. So this is definitely not unique to these threat actors. It's not even sort of really highly sophisticated operation or anything like that. And it wouldn't be surprising if like lots of different groups and different motives are deploying these similar types of operations as well.
Also, this type of network infrastructure activity we've seen previously by state-backed operations. It's not really a new tactic, as Harry has said. On top of the ones you've just mentioned, so we had the recent operation titled Slingshot, which was attributed to the US military, which leveraged router vulnerabilities as a network entry point. WikiLeaks also published details of CIA-produced malware targeting network devices. So what we're saying here is these tactics aren't necessarily new. And we need to keep all of that in mind.
So even with them not being new and the context you outlined around that, still an issue around these vulnerabilities with the devices. So what can organizations do about this?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's definitely still an issue. So because these devices offer threat actors potentially with loads of different motives, quite a lot of access to a network. And there's an abundance of devices that are kind of vulnerable. You're looking at quite a broad sort of landscape there that can be exploited. So, and also in addition to that, there are lots of kind of open source tools available, which can be used to scan for these devices and then exploit them. So for example, in this instance that was outlined by the US CERT reporting, they mentioned that the Russian actors used a tool that's freely available on GitHub to conduct the operation. So yeah, there's loads of devices and there's loads of tools that enable them to be exploited. So I guess in terms of what to do about it, I mean, it's really taking stock of the network infrastructure that you have and sort of looking at blocking those unencrypted management protocols or only using them with a VPN, preventing internet access to the network devices on the interfaces, and really looking at disabling legacy protocols as well. And quite an obvious one that's kind of overstated all the time is kind of making sure that when devices are added or looking at devices that you change the default password settings, make every device have a unique password and things like that. So basic hygiene and hardening needs to be applied to those devices. So within that advisory, there was quite a lot of information on looking for the indicators that the attackers used and also detection rules and things like that. So I'd also advise that people take a look at that for a bit more of an in-depth kind of a list of indicators there.
Okay, great. Lovely stuff. Perhaps we'll hear more about that in your takeaways, Harriet, but you'll have to keep that a secret until the end. Let's stay for now in the Russian end of the world, because there's more stories from here. In that the Russian authorities have been attempting to ban the messaging app Telegram. This restriction against Telegram was a result of a legal dispute where the company refused to provide decryption information to the government. Now that's a requirement of Russian counterterrorism legislation. However, these plans haven't gone exactly to plan, have they, Raf?
Yes and no, I think is the best way of putting it. It's a little unclear how much of what has happened was intentional, but there have definitely been some fallouts that the Russian communications watchdog could have done without. Firstly, in efforts to block Telegram IP ranges, Russian authorities also blocked up to 15 million IP addresses, including those belonging to cloud providers such as Amazon and Google. Now, Telegram tried to get around these restrictions by shifting its service to Google Cloud and Amazon Web Services, while at the same time repeatedly changing its IP address. Rather than chasing the individual's IP, though, the watchdog agency instead shut down enormous blocks of IP addresses called subnets, and this caused a lot of collateral damage as sites like Fiverr, which is another messaging app, loads of small businesses, and even Volvo dealerships were unable to access their systems. Now, the reason I say the distinction between what is intended and unintended isn't clear cut is because the watchdog obviously knew the consequences of blocking these millions of IP addresses. We should keep in mind that there's a very big political message being sent out here by Russian authorities. They're demonstrating the power they have to block services and organizations that don't comply with their instructions.
Yeah, Raf, I think this is a really interesting one as well, actually. So I noticed some people talking about it on Twitter as well. And there's actually quite an interesting site that was set up by somebody in Russia monitoring the amount of IP addresses that were being blocked and looking at that kind of huge uptick that happened after this ban. I think it was interesting to see that there was some distributed denial of service attacks that affected the website of the communications agency shortly following them starting to implement the ban. So we don't have great insight into who was behind this at the moment, but it would seem kind of a realistic possibility that potentially they were retaliation for the ban of Telegram, because it is a really popular messaging service in Russia. And I think it will be interesting to see over the next few weeks kind of how well that ban works or doesn't work, and actually how Telegram responds to it, whether they can keep their services running or whether they end up complying with the government request.
Yeah, and you made a point about it being a really popular service, and that's exactly right. I mean, and that's for multiple types of people. You've got, because it's a more secure messaging app, it's widely used by people like journalists or people that live in insecure locations under slightly oppressive regimes, and a great way for them to communicate there. It's also very popular amongst cyber criminals or people dabbling in that end of the spectrum. We've seen loads of pump and dump groups for cryptocurrencies that are used to coordinate the pump and dumping of random cryptocurrency coins in order to make money from that. But also there are lots of criminal markets, like we saw the Olymp market before on Telegram. So yeah, plenty going on there. So I can see how there'll be a lot of people very interested to see how this develops on that side of Europe. Now, it's not always in Europe that cybercrime happens, of course. And let's stay on cybercrime, because one story that caught my eye this week was about a Nigerian organized crime group dubbed the Golden Galleon, who has conducted a series of business email compromise campaigns. But this is targeting maritime and shipping companies. Happened between June 2017 and January 2018. And the group is believed to be comprised of about 20 people based in Nigeria and have stolen up to $4 million from the shipping and maritime companies.
Yeah, I like this one too, Mike, particularly for the techniques used by the group. So you mentioned business email compromise, but I'll go into a bit more detail exactly what Golden Galleon's attacks consisted of. So firstly, the attacks use marketing tools such as Boxer Mail or Email Extractor to scrape contact details from company websites. Victims were then targeted by spear phishing emails containing malicious attachments, which is obviously very common, which contain key loggers and credential extractors, such as PredatorPane, Pony Stealer, Agent Tesla. They also use a tool called Email Picky to extract the victim's contact from there. Then what happened is the attackers monitored the victim's inboxes to identify emails regarding business transactions. And then at the stage when payment details were requested, the attackers would intercept the email chain and replace the destination bank account details with a money mule account. The Golden Galleon Group also used domain spoofing, which we've talked about quite a lot on the pod before, in case they needed to impersonate a buyer or a seller in a particular transaction. So what we see here is they're using the tools that are widely available for purchase from criminal forums and marketplaces. And obviously, the technical sophistication of using these is relatively low. However, the tight organization and how well coordinated these attacks are mean that they're able to conduct highly targeted and persistent campaigns, and they've obviously made quite a bit of money from it as well. What's also significant is the industry that they're targeting as well. So maritime and shipping industries in particular are vulnerable to business email compromise attacks. I think most industries are, but these ones in particular, and other types of fraud as well, due to the global nature of the way they operate, the prevalence of smaller companies with, let's say, a relatively lower standard of security that sit within them as well. These type of companies often rely on emails to conduct very large transactions in a number of different languages, which means they can be very vulnerable to spear phishing attempts, which is the sort of crux of the technique being used here.
Yeah, business email compromise is something we keep on seeing time and time again. So an interesting instance just there. Let's stick again with cybercrime, because Magnitude Exploit Kit has been updated to include a new payload. Harriet, as our resident ransomware expert, you've recently presented a webinar with the FBI on this. Can you tell us more about Magnitude and specifically what this new payload is?
Thanks, Mike. I'm not sure I deserve the title of the expert, but I'll give it my best shot. So Magnitude's an exploit kit that's been around for quite a few years now. So basically, we saw a change in the payload that it was distributing. So it has been distributing its own sort of ransomware for about the last 7 months, and it used Cerber ransomware before this. So we've seen it switched to Gancrab, actually, which is the ransomware that was sort of identified, I think, early this year, maybe January this year. It didn't have any changes to the other TTP, so no changes in the distribution tactics or the target geography. And Gancrab certainly emerged as quite a popular payload over the last few months. And it seems to have been picked up probably quite well because it is a ransomware as a service variant, so it can be distributed by multiple campaigns as well. And while there was a decryption tool published, I think actually last time I was on the pod, I spoke about it or mentioned it, they updated the variant of Gancrab, unfortunately. So the current variant that's being distributed by Magnitude is not able to be decrypted, but hopefully some clever people will develop a tool for that in the near future. But yeah, it is quite a nice case of seeing an exploit kit reevaluating or redistributing its tools, obviously, to try and be more effective.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Harriet. And finally, no means least, we've got a couple of vulnerability stories together. Can we have a quick fire roundup of what those vulnerabilities are?
Yeah, of course. So first of all, it's a Drupal vulnerability. So this one was announced a few weeks ago, but basically last Friday morning, really, a POC was published to a proof of concept exploit code was published to GitHub. Really shortly after that, we saw exploitation of this using this POC. So it's been identified and used with crypto mining campaigns. So basically, if exploitation of this vulnerability allows sort of takeover of websites, then because of the access that this vulnerability can allow a threat actor to gain potentially on a website, I'd say it probably will be picked up through other campaigns as well. So we'll see how that develops over the coming weeks. From the moment a POC is put on GitHub, it just gets picked up so quickly into active campaigns. And then that's kind of an interesting thing to note and be aware of. And secondly, the Cisco WebEx vulnerability. So that's a input validation vulnerability, so enabling remote code execution. But a malicious flash file basically could trigger this an exploitation of that vulnerability. So haven't seen a POC for this yet. I did a quick search for it about a couple of hours ago, so nothing yet. And we'll see basically how this develops as well. So if you're using WebEx, probably should have a look into it.
Okay, great stuff. Thanks, Harriet. On to some key takeaways. Raf, what we got for us?
So I thought I'd use this Friday takeaway as a chance to discuss something that didn't quite make the menu this week. It's the 2017 Sea Cleaner supply chain compromise, which is a big story from last year and led to over 2 million downloads of the corrupt Sea Cleaner version. Now, what's happened is it now appears that the initial vector for the compromise was TeamViewer, which is a remote access software, which was actually on a developer's computer. And from here, the attackers were able to move laterally and perform the actual compromise. Now, this is somewhat unsurprising. TeamViewer has been misused in several other instances of malicious activity. It's been used for the distribution of ransomware as well. Often, legitimate credentials are used by attackers, and they're obtained by social engineering, such as spear phishing or harvesting from breaches if the individual has reused those credentials elsewhere. And what's significant here is that developers can be really attractive targets for malicious activity, obviously given the potential privileged access to the secure networks they might have. So my takeaway is therefore a reminder to companies to educate their employees, but specifically third-party developers, contractors, those who might have this type of access to secure network areas. They need to be trained about password hygiene, social engineering techniques, because we can see the quite significant impacts it could have otherwise.
Okay, nice. Sneaky managed to sneak another story in there, Raf, but I appreciate it nonetheless. Harriet, what have you got for us?
Yeah, that was a good one, Raf, as well. It's an interesting timing around interesting comment on mergers and acquisitions as well, and looking at security posture when those are conducted to comes out of that operation. I think my takeaway for this week is probably having looked at kind of the publicity and hype that came out of the Russian the advisor around the Russian operations, probably, I guess, to remain calm and always sort of look through reporting and be as objective as possible, looking for the TTPs and actually how you can incorporate that actively into network defenses. So yeah, just taking a pragmatic approach to those types of alerts and incidents.
Okay, perfect stuff. Thank you for joining us back from a long time out, Harriet. That's much appreciated.
No problems at all. Glad to enjoy the sunshine in London this weekend.
Yes, yeah, do enjoy that while it lasts.
Finally. Be the one instance for the year.
And thank you, Raf. Enjoy the sun. Thanks for listening to this week's Shadow Talk. For more research and analysis by the Digital Shadows research team, visit resources.digitalshadows.com.